Michigan Embedded Correspondent John Solberg, and you are listening to the Barbecue Central Show.
Start the game! Let's go!
We'll do it live.
Do it live! I'll write it and we'll do it live!
So to get that perfect barbecue, you use wood. Are you sure it's safe? Whatever. We put the lighter fluid on, strike the match, and... Oh.
Should we call the fire department?
That might be a good idea.
Welcome to the Really Big Barbecue Central Show. This show is the show that talks about all things that are important to the world of barbecue and grilling, originating from the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame city, Bomb City, USA, Cleveland, Ohio, the barbecue capital of the North Coast. I'm your program host, Greg Brempy. Happy to have you aboard here on your Tuesday evening's Live Fire Fun and Frivolity Show. If you'd like to get in contact with the show this evening, or you'd like to follow the show during off-show hours, here's how you do it.
You can get in touch with the show by sending an email to Greg at BBQCentralShow.com. Follow us on all the social media channels at BBQ Central Show. And be sure to subscribe to the show podcast feed on your favorite podcast platform.
Anything else you want to find out about the show can be found at the main website, TheBBQCentralShow.com. And here's what's happening in case you get the newsletter coming up in about 13 minutes from now. The creator of AmazingRibs.com with a hot release of news tonight. I am, of course, talking about Meathead from AmazingRibs.com. And then after Meathead, we'll be joined by second Tuesday of the month regular guest 35 past the first hour, that being our pal Robert F. Moss or RobertFMoss.com. And we will be talking about the fourth subject of 12 that at the very beginning of the year, I listed out a whole bunch of stuff. And Robert said, ironically, all of this would make good topics throughout the course of the year. So why don't we tackle them that way? So that's what we're doing. Topic number four, which is the history of barbecue as a food and as a community aggregator. I'm trying to recall it off the top of my head because that's not it specifically. However, it's going to be engaging and informative like every meeting from Robert Moss has been here in 2024. Then we'll move to the second hour. Because the continued request for more info on premium handmade cigars is being requested, the second hour is the likes we have yet to see on this show covering this topic. I am welcoming in for the first time the co-owner, I guess you could say, of JRE Tobacco, makers of Aladino cigars, the one and only Justo Aroa, showing up on a barbecue show to talk about his great cigar company that he has with his father and a number of other family members as well, actually. So plenty to talk about as it relates to getting a brand up and going, how the cigars are made, how they differ from each other. Trust me, I have a line of questioning the likes you have never seen as it relates to cigars, especially for those of us that are just new getting into it, or maybe you've smoked them for a long time, you just really never cared to know too much about brands. We had a discussion with Jeremy Ellis last week from McAuliffe Cigars, and this week it's Justo Aroa, which is the name and the face of JRE Tobacco. And again, makers of Aladino cigars, which are some of my favorites. So that's how the show is laying out here this evening. Meathead from AmazingRibs.com. Shortly, Robert Moss after him and Justo Aroa in the second hour. Don't forget, you can follow me socially, Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, and Snapchat, all at the handle at BBQ Central Show. And we say good evening to those of you watching tonight through one of the video streaming platforms. You can go to Facebook.com/BBQ Central Show, Twitter.com twitch.tv/BBQCentralShow, or you can watch it on YouTube, youtube.com/@BBQCentralShow. And we have a YouTube poll question of the week that is brand new, and we're asking everybody this. Are you currently a social or regular consumer of premium cigars? And currently, 67% of you are saying no. I'm not shocked. There's a stat out there concerning the number or percentage of the American population that is consumers of premium hand-rolled cigars. I'm not going to blow it for you. It's very low, so I'm not surprised to see that more than half are not premium cigar smokers in any form or fashion, but maybe we can tweak that here in the second hour. Results of the poll question from last week, where I asked everybody, as an adult, have you ever been punched in the face for real? 25% of you said yes, and 75% of you ended up saying no, and we're going to start here tonight. This isn't where I thought I was going to start this week, but last Wednesday when I fired up the Facebooks, there it was right in the middle of my feed from something called the Let's Get to Cooking community that How to Barbecue Right runs and curates. Someone who belonged to that group posted something along the lines of, okay, Mr. Rempe, leave Malcolm Reed alone. He's been so good to you all these years as a guest, and you're ripping on him for missing one time, blah, blah, blah. If that was all it ended up being, I wouldn't even be talking about this right now, but it wasn't it, because like many other groups across the internet, 20 or 30 other comments are also dropped in there echoing what this guy's talking about, or other things like the following. The show sucks. The host of the show sucks. I stopped listening years ago. Sounds like Bob and Tom, but at least the Bob and Tom show is live. This show's live, dumbass. It's a two-hour show, and 110 minutes of it are ad reads, and 10 minutes are show. The list goes on with the bullshit that these guys were posting. Only one or two people in that community took up for me. That's very nice. It's one or two more people than I thought. But the more I read through the post, the more lies and straight up nonsense was being posted. So I voluntarily violated rule number two of my very show, which of course is don't get hooked. And I jumped in and I answered all of the lies and misinformation with the actual facts. And by noon on Wednesday, the post was completely deleted. So to any of you dopes that are tuning in tonight, right now, to catch it live, take note. In regards to my friend Malcolm Reed, not your friend, my friend, who I have known for well over a decade, who has been showing up on the show for well over a decade, nothing I said was directed at him. When I said I was reminded last week that as the host, I should trust no one, that's not a rip on Malcolm for not showing up. It's a mentality as a host that I continually try to follow. Lazy hosts rely on the guest to carry the interview. The reason I am better than everyone else is because I do the work outside of the show. Hours and hours each week. I don't just magically turn the mic on and go off the top of my head. Bad shows do that. I don't hope for a good show. I prepare for a good show and then deliver a good show, sometimes a great show, each and every week. And let me remind you, you don't have to listen to this show ever, but you will, because haters always listen more than the real fans, because you're a bunch of weirdo losers. Do you really hate the fact that businesses within this industry want to support the show and I get to make some money at that? Am I not allowed to do that? Am I not allowed to leverage my business acumen, my professionalism, to make a few extra bucks, you jealous bitches? I don't know if you're aware of this or not, but since 2006, when the show was born, you have paid $0 and 0 cents to listen to any of this content for 18 years. And to that end, follow me here, because I'm a fan of podcasts of all kinds. Big fan of the New Heights podcast for a number of reasons, as I'm sure many of you are. You love the New Heights podcast. It's like number one out there to Joe Rogan. But I would like to point out to those who say that my show is ad-riddled, the New Heights podcast is routinely 30 to 60 minutes shorter in length than mine. They have double the amount of ads, and it's showtime taken up by those ads. So do you also shit on them for doing the same thing? Do they get a pass because they are NFL players and they're cooler than me? If I was dating Taylor Swift, would I be allowed to have sponsors of the show? I mean, if we're talking about money here, who needs money? I could certainly use every nickel and thin gilder I can get my hands on. Those guys got hundreds of millions of dollars between the two of them. And by the way, I'm not begrudging anybody for getting any money. If you can get it, if you can make it, no matter how you get it, good for you. But don't shit on me and then not shit on every other podcast that you listen to that has sponsors. Lastly, if I might, and I've said this many times, you can hate on me all you want for the audio standard that I've implemented for my guests on the show over the past 2+ years, but I'm not going to apologize for it. And I won't put my audience through a bad audio experience. I read comments in those posts along the lines of content carries the show. It's not all about the audio quality. I agree. Content, very important. But guess what? You can have both in this day and age, and I require it from my guests. Don't get me holding my standard confused with other hosts not having the testicular fortitude to implement the same audio standard that I believe in. It's scary to tell the guest, hey, it's either this way or beat it, because you want the interview, right? But when you show that you care for the audience and that it's your show, the guest should accommodate your request to sound just as good as you do. And if they don't, do the work to find a guest that will. Those are the folks you might want to build relationships with going down the road. Not the this is how you're going to get me, take it or leave it kind of folks. So no, I'm not going to apologize for having my standard. I won't apologize for not booking or leaving the interview early when the standard isn't being met. Period. End of story. And to any of you that jumped me in the post last week on Facebook, you come to my page, facebook.com/BBQCentral, and we can start something over there if you want. And I promise to the Lord and Savior Jesus Christ, I won't delete it. It'll stay up. Right, Meathead is ready to go. More scared than ever, I would imagine, at this point. Let's talk about the Schwank Grill. You're seeing it right there. You might be thinking to yourself, well, maybe I could take this to a baseball game parking lot this year. The answer is yes, totally portable, especially if you get the liquid propane version, because there is a natural gas version. If you want to plumb it right to the house, you're not interested in really taking it all over the place, natural gas is the way to go. Look at the variety of food that can be cooked on here. It's not just a steak machine. It's chicken wings. It's lobster tails. It's asparagus and other veggies. You can use the drip tray at the bottom to saute some of your vegetables or make a resting sauce or a butter bath if you do would like. Seafood easily accommodated within the Schwank Grill as well. And I can save you money on top of it all. How about that? You go to Schwank Grills right now or a little bit later in the show. Schwank, S-C-H-W-A-N-K, schwankgrills.com, and use promo code BBQCentral at checkout. You can save $150 off any Schwank Grill, either the liquid propane or the natural gas. It's that easy to save money and enjoy restaurant quality heat, and with a multitude of level adjustments. You can control the intensity of the heat that's hitting whatever you're putting in there. As you saw that guy just taking it out of the video, you can do a creme brulee topper on there. How many grills are offering you the ability to do creme brulee after you just got done searing a steak or cooking a lobster tail in 3 minutes? Some of the best places on earth are using it. Morton's Steakhouse, Del Frisco's, Cut 432. They're not using infrared burner technology. They're actually using Schwank technology. Hurry up. A lot of you are doing it already. Don't miss out on the grilling season. They're going fast. And save $150. Schwankgrills.com. BBQ Central at checkout. Logo on the main webpage. Clickable links on the newsletter and in the show notes. Find it and get it. You tell me how much you'll love it. We're back with Meathead right after this. Stick around. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Barbecue Central Show. Broadcasting live from the Barbecue Central Show studios in Cleveland, Ohio. You're listening to the Barbecue Central Show. Once again, here's your host, Greg Rempe.
Welcome back to this portion of the show being brought to you by CookinPellets.com, your number one source for quality wood pellets for all your pellet-driven cookers. You go ahead and visit CookinPellets.com and see what they have to offer. And then buy at Lowe's.com or Walmart.com or Amazon.com instead. Great shipping rates there, same great products, as told to be by Chris Becker. My first guest tonight has created the most heavily trafficked barbecue and grilling website on the face of the earth, a best-selling author, Barbecue Hall of Famer, Barbecue Central Show's guest Hall of Famer. Does the list go on? Undoubtedly. And we are happy to welcome back our pal Meathead from AmazingRibs.com. Meathead, we have a YouTube poll question of the week that we're asking everybody here this evening. Are you currently a social or regular smoker of premium cigars, yes or no?
No.
Were you ever?
No.
Really? I'm shocked. Well, that seems like it would be right up your alley with all the other nonsense you were into in past lives.
Yeah. My attorney was really big into cigars, and I bought a really gorgeous Spanish cedar humidor, and he loaded me up with them. And every time I smoked a cigar, I ended up sleeping on the couch.
Because you stunk?
I stunk.
Yeah.
It stuck to my beard. It stuck to my hair. It stuck to my clothes. And there's two people who live in this house, and one of them didn't like it.
I got it. So that was it for the world of premium cigars and Meathead. All right. 73% of the YouTube voting public are saying that they indeed do not smoke cigars, but I'm with the 27% that do at this point. We have a topic for tonight, Meathead, and
yeah,
you know, if the fans recall, and I know my most ardent fans do recall, right as we were wrapping up the segment in March, you said that AmazingRibs.com was right on the precipice of finishing a purchase of an unnamed website, website at that point. And it had to be still remaining nameless at that point, even if I was guessing, and I guessed completely wrong because all the stuff wasn't done. But a month later, everything's done, ready for access. So while I thought this was going to be announced fully on the show, it's already raced around the internet like a celebrity sex tape. So for those that aren't aware, give the semi-famous Dave Anderson scoop on what exactly is going on.
Well, first of all, it shouldn't be racing around the internet. We purchased a website called barbecuestars.com, and I'll tell you the background, the story, and what's there.
Can't wait.
And we had to, by obligation, inform the cooks who are featured in the 120 broadcast quality videos on this website that we now own. And they're all about to be free to the members of our Pitmaster Club. This website launched in spring 2019 and sold for $299. And the videos are outstanding.
What does that mean? I mean, sold for $299. That's how much it would cost when you wanted to get it in 2019.
There were 12 barbecue stars or various pit masters and grill masters. Tuffy Stone, Harry Sue, Kent Rollins, Dave Buska, chefs, really top cooks. And the videos are broadcast quality. I was one of the 12 cooks. The two guys who started, Ken and Brett, who started the steak cook-offs. We have 12 really outstanding cooks, and the video quality is brilliant. And they shot all these videos, put them together on a website, and sold access to them for $299. And they sold about 1,500. But it wasn't up to the desirable number that they wanted. And it just kind of quietly sat there on the internet. And we bought the entire website. And so now we own all 120 of these gorgeous videos, really informative, really fascinating. And each of the pitmasters, there's a 20 to 30 minute, really nice video interviewing them, a la Greg Rempe, about who they are, how they got into barbecue and so on. Really fascinating stuff. Plus their recipes. We're going to package all the recipes together in an ebook, and it's all free, not $2.99, all free to the members of our Pitmaster Club. Not entirely free. Pitmaster Club membership is $34.95 a year. So instead of $299, you get all 120 videos for $34.95, and they're really good. We closed the deal last week. If you go to barbecuestars.com, you can see a teaser. I sent it to you. Do you want to run that teaser tonight? All right. While you're thinking about it,
stand by.
There's a teaser on the site that gives you a sense for what's there, but it's not open to the public yet. And in fact, it's not even open to the members of our Pitmaster Club yet, because we have to create, it has a password access. And our Pitmaster Club has a password access, and we got to make the two of them talk to each other. And we haven't crossed that bridge yet. Oh, there it is. Okay. You got audio?
No. And I can't switch it, otherwise it's going to dump what we're recording. That's more important. But at least people can see like what the quality of the video is looking like. Of course, yes. And you said there's Jack Arnold. Do you know who Jack Arnold is, Mita?
Yeah, he worked for a Big Green Egg. I didn't know him, but the people who put together this program did. We got Harry Sue, Dave Buska, Kent Rollins. If you've never seen Kent Rollins,
he's been on the show many times. Meathead, of course.
Oh, this guy is so cool, and he does some really fun stuff on video for us. Tuffy Stone, Ariane Dolgan from D'Artagnan.
Who?
Dean Fearing, a five-star chef out of Dallas. Tim Grandinetti, another chef. Kent Phillips and Brett Galloway, the two guys who started the State Cook-Off Association. Matt Pittman, Meat Church.
Yeah,
heard of him. And Jack Arnold from Big Green Egg. I mean, it's really rich, deep, and we own it. We own it, and if you're a member of our Pitmaster Club, you're going to get it for free.
All right, so we have plenty of questions to dig in here to get answers to.
I want to just clarify it, because you gave me a little spiff here. I had to notify all 12 of the Pitmasters who are on the videos that there's a new owner. So I notified them before tonight. I told you you'd be the first, and you are the first to have public notification of this. I also hinted at it in the Pitmaster Club.
Mm. Did anybody guess right?
Oh yeah, because I kind of teased the video, but I haven't really announced it on Twitter, Facebook, any social media. It's not in our newsletters. It's not on our homepage. It's not on our website. We haven't said anything publicly until tonight. Tonight, it is now public knowledge and available.
How much you pay
for this? And we're working on it. Pardon?
How much you pay for this?
How much? What was the question?
How much did you pay for it?
I'm sorry. I seem to have an audio problem.
Yes, all right. Okay, look. Since we're not answering that question, let me ask what might appear to be a dumb question, but I'm going to tell you why that's not a dumb question. Is there some kind of a deal worked out where you actually don't have to pay them like cash in exchange for the videos? Because let's be honest, as you said just a few minutes ago, these videos have just been laying dormant in a really not popular website for years. So it would almost be beneficial for who was keeping those videos to work out some kind of a deal where you're like, hey, we can showcase this. Maybe we can work out some kind of a deal where I'm not paying you a whole bunch of money, whatever that amount is. I'm not paying you X amount, and now I own it.
Now, this was a straight up, very simple purchase. We paid X amount of dollars in cash. We gained ownership of the website and the videos.
And the web address and all that stuff? Deal.
A straight deal. Pardon?
You own the website, the web address, all the internet properties of Barbecue Stars now?
Own the website, own the URL, own all the videos, own everything related to it. Hmm. We bought it outright. They got, I think when it first came out in 2019, between the initial offerings and multiple secondary offerings, I think they made a small profit. It's interesting. The site was launched by a woman who started a website called Knit Stars, K-N-I-T Stars. And apparently the community surrounding knitting is every bit as involved and devoted and dedicated as the community surrounding barbecue.
Undoubtedly.
If not more.
My sister's into that.
And she did this website, Knit Stars, where she went out and found these people who are brilliant knitters, and I've watched them. Some are doing gorgeous, not just hats and sweaters, but artwork and stuff. And she sold subscriptions and apparently was hugely successful. And she was based out of Tulsa. And also based out of Tulsa is Richard Alexander from Hasty Bake. And Hasty Bake is one of my all-time favorite charcoal grills.
The best.
And he's a really super guy. And apparently he knew her through the tennis club or something. And he said, well, hell, if you're making all this money on knitting, why don't we do one for barbecue? And she said, okay, hold my hand and let's do it. So Richard went out and recruited me and Harry and Tuffy and all the others to be the subjects of these videos. They got a video team, and they didn't have different teams all around the country. They sent one team, really good team, cameraman, director, audio people, to my house, to Tuffy's house, and film them. So there's a continuity in the video style. And they're just really excellent. And she sold them, and we promoted it. And I think the total number of sales were under 2,000. And, you know, $2.99, she probably broke even or made some money. I haven't quizzed her on that. But eventually it just kind of petered out, and there was not a great deal of follow-up interest, and it was just sitting out there. Mm-hmm. And I went to her, and I said, would you like to sell this? And we reached an agreement on price, and I bought all 120 videos, the URL, and the website. And we've converted the website to ours. We're still, as I mentioned earlier, trying to make it so that members of the Pitmaster Club can log into barbecuestars.com either seamlessly or automatically. This is all technical mumbo jumbo that I don't understand, but my IT guys are working on it, and we'll have it solved in the next couple of weeks.
So the videos aren't going to actually be in the Pitmasters Club. You're going to have to go over to Barbecue Stars where they're going to live going forward.
At the outset, at least at the outset. Eventually, we'll probably move them over onto our website so they're more closely integrated into our website. But at the outset, it's right there. And all those who bought originally still have access. They have. They were promised originally unlimited access, lifetime access, and we're honoring that right now.
When are we turning that off? Hopefully, like in the next 6 months. That's nonsense.
I don't know that we'll turn it off. We'll see.
Why not? How many people signed up for that?
About 1,500 or something.
Yeah, we'll
see.
They sign up for it in the assumption that the owners are going to be there forever. You're the new owner. Your rules now. So I think my thought would be you send out a nice email and you say, hey, good news and bad news. The good news is the videos are still here. The bad news is I'm the new owner. And for a mere $35, not only will you get access to these great videos that you love, I guess, but you get access to this whole Pitmasters Club. There's value add, and maybe you can convert 25% or 80% of 1,500 into new members. Why not? 35 bucks is nothing to these guys.
It's possible. Anybody who has known me and watched me run my little business knows that I don't like delivering bad news. So good news part, yeah, I like. Bad news part, I'm not so sure about. We'll figure it out. Right now, it's just another benefit. Pitmaster Club, you get 6 free ebooks. There's all kinds of other videos there. There's a great community, and we police this community. There are no fire wars, flame wars, no politics, race, religion, all the garbage. You were talking about the people giving you crap today. I was arguing with a guy on Twitter last week.
That's all you do on Twitter. All you do is argue with people on Twitter.
And I'm arguing with him about fat caps. And all of a sudden, I'm a pedophile. I mean, for crying out loud, the minute you disagree with somebody, he's a pedophile? Jesus. I mean, you know, none of that is in the Pitmaster Club. The minute somebody ad hominem attacks another member, we remove it. We give them a warning. 3 warnings, they're out. You know what? We average about 2 people a year kicking out.
Wow.
We have 15,000 members now.
Listen to what I'm saying. So maybe drop the good news, bad news and say good news, better news. The good news is you only got to pay 35 bucks. The better news is you got all this great content on the biggest traffic website on the face of the earth. It's a great idea. I don't want commission. You just make sure that you install that and take advantage of it because that's a good business. Now, for the 12 talents you excluded, so 11 talents that you're getting in contact with, are you just letting them know, hey, I'm going to be the new owner of the videos, or do you have to get like sign off, name, image, likeness, stuff like that? Or is that all a non-issue?
As soon as we closed the deal, we notified them and invited them, send us updates because there's biographical information. And, you know, some of them are not working for so-and-so anymore, or they got new ventures. So we're going to be updating all that. The response has been overwhelming. So for everybody's thrilled. The Pitmaster Club has 15,000 members. When they launched Barbecue Stars, they peaked at 1,500 members. So they're getting 10 times the exposure. We have links back to Harry Sue and all his rubs and sauces and his website and his classes, Tuffy. We'll have all that. So it's a promotional opportunity for them. Kent Rollins was delighted. Sent me a very nice message, glad of it. It's going to be just cool. It's really cool. These are really, and the videos, I'm not given a hyperbole. You know that. These videos are really good. They're really beautiful. They're really educational. They're really informational. And I'm very proud to be the owner of them.
Are you going to ask these folks that are the content creators to, like, go out and promote this, and do they get some kind of a spiff if they bring back in? Because that would be a great, I mean, you didn't know who Jack Arnold was, but right now he's the hottest thing going in live fire influencing. He's got like 250,000 followers alone.
Really? I never heard of him until I bought this website.
Yeah, he's super hot. He's a great dancer.
That's fantastic. Yeah. That's fantastic. The whole idea here is my little business. You like to talk business. You're a businessman. You understand dollars.
Yeah.
My little business, AmazingRibs.com. It's a website. I don't have a big food magazine or a television network backing us. We support ourselves. People complain there's too much advertising. If you join the Pitmaster Club, we block all the advertising. You're supporting us. We do make money from advertising. We do make money. We test products. We only recommend products we love. When we link to Amazon or others, they may pay us a small finder's fee, for linking to them, but we don't link to anything that we don't love. We don't know who advertises on the site. We use third-party companies to handle all the advertising. I couldn't tell you any company that's advertised with us. I have no idea, nor do I have any interest. The biggest source of revenue, our biggest lifeline, is membership. Do the math. 15,000 members at $35 a head. My goal is 20,000. Get 20,000 members at $15 a head. Everybody on my team gets a raise. We can afford to do a new design. The website's looking kind of old and dated, but we're doing okay. We're in the black, not a great deal. I'm not about to buy a boat, but we've had conversations in the past. I'm taking a vacation this week.
Look at you.
Yeah.
Where are you going?
I haven't had Naperville? A vacation in maybe 8 years.
Yeah.
Another one in August. My wife booked another one.
Wow.
So, you know, I'm like you. People complain about the way I'm making a living. I'm not getting rich. I live in a nice little brick bungalow in the western suburbs of Chicago. I drive a 10-year-old car, 12-year-old car. I'm doing what I love. I'm having fun. And I have a team around me who are making a decent living. And now we have added a tremendous new benefit to the Pitmaster Club, which will hopefully help us reach 20,000 members.
We're going to keep track of this, and we'll get an update a month from now to see how this is all unfolding, and especially if membership starts skyrocketing up. I think, again, leaning on some of these folks to leverage their social media following. I mean, some of them are very... big social media following. So this should help.
I haven't given the marketing aspects of it all that thought. But there's one other thing that you and I talk about occasionally that I need to mention.
What?
And that is, today I turned in the last of the book. 320 photographs went in today.
Wow.
So it's 145,000 words. 320 photographs are all in the hands of HarperCollins, and God help me, I hope they like it.
So when could we possibly see it? Next spring?
Yeah, it'll come out next spring. You, I'm sure, will get a proof copy sometime in the winter.
Are you being coy, Meathead? Do you need me to write the foreword? Is that what you're asking?
I haven't figured out who to write the foreword yet, if anybody. The last book, I got Kenji Lopez Alt to do.
Yeah,
that.
Great.
That was very cool.
You should reach out to Chris Young. He's like the leader of the new school right now. He's great.
Yeah, Chris would be a good one.
Yeah.
Christopher Kimball and I over at
Milk Street.
Milk Street.
Yeah.
Okay, he's very good. He and I have become friends. We'll see. I haven't made a decision. Originally, the original concept of the book had an art theme, and that didn't make the cut because it was too long. And I had Harry Connick Jr. signed on to write the foreword. Huh? He's a great barbecue lover, and he's a good friend. And so we'll find somebody else to write the foreword.
All right. AmazingRibs.com is the place to go, especially if you want to check out these new videos. It's only going to cost you $35 if you're not a Pitmaster Club member already. And $35, I mean, come on. It's nothing. It's cheap. It's
30-day free trial. We haven't figured out how many of the videos we'll give free trial members, but you'll get a few.
Meathead can be found here on the second Tuesday of every month. It's AmazingRibs.com. Meathead, thank you so much, and we will see you in May. It's Meathead right there, doing what he does best. AmazingRibs.com. I have met Meathead in person more than anybody else that I have known in association with the show. I've never been to his house. I can take a hint. He doesn't want me to write the foreword. He doesn't want me to come to his house. All right. Keep it at a distance. Robert Moss is ready to go. I will talk to you quickly about Pits and Spits before we get to him. Are you tired of settling for mediocre? For mediocre grilling experience? Then step your game up.
Step your game up.
Bring the ultimate flavor and cooker to the backyard barbecues. Pits and Spits Charcoal Grills offers the highest quality live fire cooking experience you can get in the market today using either wood or charcoal. Their solid fuel grills produce those classic flavors you're looking for when you have the time to fire up the grill and cook for family and friends. With a large adjustable fuel tray, you can raise and lower the fire to control and fine-tune the heat. Their take on the very popular Santa Maria-style grill. So if you've liked the concept of that, but you don't want something specifically like that, then Pits & Spits charcoal grills are going to knock you out of the park. And you'll have them for a lifetime. Pitsandspits.com/BBQCentral to check them out. That's pitsandspits.com, all spelled out, /BBQCentral, and use promo code Charcoal Central. You can save $150 off any grill. Charcoal Central to check out when you visit pitsandspits.com/BBQCentral show. We're back with Robert Moss right after this. Stick around. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Barbecue Central show. Howard Stern, Jim Rome, Dan Patrick, and Greg Rampey. The Mountain Rushmore of talk show entertainment. Now, let's get back to the Barbecue Central show.
And we thank Meathead for joining us the last segment. This portion of the show being brought to you by Fireboard 2, Fireboard 2 Drive, and Fireboard Pro. Monitor up to 6 different temperatures simultaneously. Connect to Wi-Fi for cloud-based monitoring or Bluetooth if you want. Alexa and the Google Assistant, along with a host of other smart speakers, fully integrated with Fireboard as well. Fireboard.com is the website, 816-945-2232 to ask questions. My next guest, the contributing barbecue editor to Southern Living Magazine, 2023 Barbecue Central Show's guest Hall of Famer. And we welcome back our pal, Robert Moss. Robert, we have a YouTube poll question of the week that we're asking everybody. Are you currently a social or regular smoker of premium cigars? Yes or no?
No, I'm not. No.
I'll ask you like I asked Meathead. Ever in the past or just never?
Yeah, back was, I guess, around the late 90s, around 2000, when martini bars and cigar bars were becoming cool again. Yeah, I would smoke a few cigars back then. But then I think probably a lot like me, Dad. Once I got married, had kids and all that, it sort of just, yeah, faded out. So not anymore.
Are you shocked that Meathead has turned everything in for this supposed second book that has been on 6 years and waiting?
Well, I'm relieved, I guess. I, you know, the thing about a book is it just needs to be done. The longer you take it, just get it done. So I'm glad that he has.
We have an April topic, and the theme, let's call it, is tracing the cultural and social significance of barbecue beyond a meal. So we all know that if you look back through time, a lot of big events have been associated with some type of a barbecue or outdoor event where cooking is happening. And maybe there's a delineator there too. I think, you know, when you come up north here, obviously there's a lot of big cooking events, but a lot of you folks wouldn't necessarily call them barbecues, where sometimes when you get north of the Mason-Dixon line, they start throwing around grilling and barbecue as interchangeable terms. And I certainly don't subscribe to that thought. And a lot of the folks within our industry don't necessarily subscribe to that. But how have regional variations in barbecues developed over time? And how do they reflect the cultural and social makeup of different areas in the South?
Yeah. Well, piggybacking on, I think, the last couple of segments, we talked a lot about 19th century and the outdoor barbecue tradition.
Yeah.
And I think I said a couple of times during then that what we think of as the regional differences in barbecue today really developed in the early 20th century. And, you know, from all my research, it seems pretty clear that restaurants were a big driver of that. The rise of restaurants just really started becoming informal operations, barbecue stands in the 1910s. Or so, 1920s, you start getting real restaurants, and those just developed during the 20th century. And that's really when you see, you know, regional differences in terms of the meats that are served, the cooking, the pit styles, the sauces, the side dishes that go alongside. That all really, in my thesis at least, is that all really was a result of the commercialization of barbecue, the creation of restaurants. Because before that, in the 19th century, you know, what was served, the way it was cooked was pretty much the same from region to region to region, and all the beloved differences really came in the 20th century. And that's sort of a, you know, there's a geographical element to that, which is like the wood you cook on. You know, I think we talked in the past, you know, oak in South Carolina, post oak in Texas, you know, a lot of hickory as you get up into the Piedmont, North Carolina, mesquite in western Texas. You know, that was just sort of what was growing there. The cultural and social aspect of it, though, I think is a little bit harder to nail down. And the aspect of why did pork and mustard sauce become the big thing in South Carolina, and vinegar sauce in North Carolina, and beef and you know, in Texas. And a lot of people have tried to make more true cultural explanations for that, which usually goes to the heritage of whoever in those regions are cooking. So you'll hear a lot about South Carolina barbecue, the Midlands South Carolina style barbecue, which is, you know, pork shoulder or whole hog with the mustard based barbecue sauces. Well, that's because there were a lot of Germans who settled the middle part of South Carolina, which on one hand is true, but there was a huge German community around Columbia in the middle part of the state. There's an area called Dutch Fork, and that's from Deutsch. It was a lot of German immigrants in the right before the revolution settled in between these two rivers, the fork of two rivers, right where they meet and where Columbia is today. But the problem is the mustard based tradition and the pork heavy tradition really didn't emerge until the 20th century. So did those Germans just keep those intermarrying? And, you know, there was very little German immigration to South Carolina in the 19th century. And I've actually traced a lot of the families. People will point out various German names of barbecue joints in South Carolina. But yeah, there's one guy who went back to the 18th century, but they married all these Scotch, Irish, and English and everyone else. So it's really hard to actually trace the Germans, you know, we like mustard here because of the German influence. At the same time, people make the same case about the Piedmont, North Carolina, which is pork shoulder. Oh, there's a lot of Germans who settled the Piedmont. Well, the Germans like pork shoulder and they like vinegar. And so therefore the vinegar sauce must be German. And the people will say the same thing about Texas. A lot of the Texas.
We're saying Germans created Southern style barbecue. I think that's what we just found out.
These Germans certainly got around, yes. And they invented everything. And they like pork, they like vinegar, they like mustard, you know, so you get quite a lot of that. So I've never really had great cultural explanations that say this developed in this area because a whole bunch of people living in Texas or Virginia or Kentucky, you know, came from somewhere else. I think it's more just to be explained by the dynamics of how restaurants came together and how the mentorship system, you know, people sort of, the restaurateurs sort of came up with their styles and then they taught it to the people who worked for them who went and opened their own restaurants. And that's a much easier thing to trace. You can actually show the lineage of that cooking style as opposed to trying to map people's, you know, where their great-great-great-grandparents came from back in the 18th century.
When you were talking a little bit ago about as the evolution of restaurants happened, you can start to trace different regions and how their side dishes are associated. What side dishes are associated with what regions? I would think that would be kind of fascinating.
Yeah, and everything, again, is blurring here in the 21st century because, you know, the internet is blurring all this together. But if you go to a traditional Eastern North Carolina place, I mean, they're going to have coleslaw, which is usually made with mayonnaise, so a white coleslaw. They actually have a corn sticks, which is a form of cornbread made in like those little molds. So they're sort of shaped like long corn fingers and boiled potatoes. You don't see that very many other places, but boiled potatoes, perhaps boiled in water with a little tomato in there, so they're red. That's a very Eastern North Carolina kind of thing. If you go to Memphis, it's beans and slaw, but a very different type of slaw. You know, it's not the white slaw. It's going to be usually a mustard slaw, a yellow slaw, something like that. So, you know, those types of dishes were things that sort of came up along, you know, during the 20th century, and people had to come up with side dishes that they were going to serve and what would go alongside. You know, Texas, the beans in Texas are very different than they are in Memphis. In Texas, they're much more chili beans with chili powder as opposed to like sweet molasses like you would find in Memphis or somewhere like that.
One of the other sub points we're going to be talking about is how barbecue is served as a gathering point. So when we look at barbecue playing a role in fostering social connections and building a sense of place in Southern communities, how are we looking at that?
Well, I mean, from the earliest days, barbecues were, and that was one of the key features of barbecue. It's not just something to eat. It's not just, you know, you talked a little bit about the backyard barbecue where you grill some hamburgers and things. But those tend to be small scale gatherings. The very nature of a 19th century barbecue, a very large outdoor event, cooking whole animals. If you cook a whole pig, you're going to feed 50 to 100 people off of, you know, a good large pig. By its very nature, a whole animal cookery, you need a lot of people to eat that. And you aren't going to do it very often. There's no refrigeration back then. You couldn't buy a shoulder and throw it in the pit. So you would do these for very special occasions. You bring in hundreds, if not thousands of people from all over. It was a great way to have community celebrations. Early on, you know, one of the first, you know, big occasions for barbecues with the 4th of July. It became the preeminent way of celebrating the 4th of July in the South. And then from there throughout the country, at least the first half of the 19th century. And it was really a way to get people together and celebrate, but they had speakers, they sang songs, they read the Declaration of Independence. It was a way in the early United States of sort of instilling your civics lessons into all the members of the community. You would get together, you would celebrate the 4th, you would, you know, learn about patriotism and the heroes and all that. And so barbecue really played a role in sort of civics, if you will, early part of the 19th century. As you go later up until the 20th century even, it's always been a way that communities would get together to celebrate all sorts of things. Middle of the 19th century, anytime there were railroad completed the railroad lines as the U.S. was building railroads throughout the South, they would celebrate they would hold big community barbecues to raise money, subscriptions, as they called them, which was really stock, to build the railroads. And when the railroad was complete, the train finally arrived, they have a giant barbecue to celebrate the arrival of a railroad, which was very important because that would make or break a community back then. That kept right on through all kinds of schools, community celebrations became a very popular way to raise funds for churches, for any kind of civic groups, anything like that. So barbecue has long been a way to get a lot of people, not just, you know, 4 or 5, but hundreds of people together. And then when you do that, you naturally have community, you naturally begin to, you know, interact and bond. And it was sort of a way in the days before television, before mass communications, of getting a bunch of people together and, you know, share common ideas and you know, share traditions.
In current times, we love to talk about how barbecues are bringing people together. It's an ultimate common denominator. It doesn't matter if you're black or white or what your job is, whatever. Going back through history, though, do barbecue traditions differ between social classes or ethnicities in the South? And if they do, how do they differ?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, for sure. One of the big differences, you know, in the 19th century, and there's also a gender divide as well, because barbecues, at least up until the 1840s, 1850s, were largely male affairs. Yep. It wasn't a thing that women went to. The African Americans would be at barbecues largely as in the form of labor, particularly in the parts of the South where, you know, the people digging and the pits and cooking the animals were largely enslaved laborers. There would be typically at these events, the black members of the community would be invited to come, but they would get to like sort of eat after the white folks had finished and get the leftovers and all that kind of thing. So there's long been a divide between, you know, for these community barbecues, they reflected society. It was a reflection of the way the organization of society. Really interesting, you know, if you talk about Juneteenth, which people talk about that, the Juneteenth holiday a lot, emancipation barbecues became a very important institution in the African-American community in the wake of the Civil War. Typically, it's Juneteenth in Texas was June 19th, which is sort of when that day sort of got fixed. But in the 19th century throughout the South, it was a different date. It was really when that particular area, as Union troops arrived and the Emancipation Proclamation was put into effect, that, you know, is January 1 was typically the Emancipation Day in the Carolinas. So each state had a little different day, but the African-American communities would hold very large barbecues and celebrate Emancipation Day. And it was a time to really be building the connections and the relationships within those communities. And that carried on well into the 20th century and has been recently revived in the Juneteenth celebrations that really in the last 10 or 15 years have gotten, you know, much more recognized. There was a holiday that was almost forgotten up until just recently.
If somebody wanted to learn more about the history of Southern barbecue, what's the name of your book they should be buying and reading?
It's called Robert Moss. It's Barbecue, the History of an American Institution. But if you just type in Robert Moss Barbecue, you'll find it wherever books are sold and still in print and still out there. So that's dig into a lot of it there. You can also go to robertfmoss.com. In addition to what's in the book, there's lots of articles and other things there if you're interested in sort of digging into the history there.
I don't know if you heard it or not as we close out the segment, but your pal Daniel Vaughn over at Texas Monthly is touring the country, putting together a list of the best Texas barbecue joints not in Texas. Thoughts on that?
I have a few thoughts on that, but
oh, yeah?
You know, I have known about this quite a while. You know, we had a barbecue editors convention here in Charleston a year ago or so, and he was here because he was driving through the Carolinas, you know, eating at every Texas style joint he could find in the Carolinas. You know, in part, I feel like that's like going to Paris and Milan and checking out, you know, the Hard Rock Cafe or the McDonald's or whatever, and just seeing how the burgers are. So if you want to do that, that's good. Though in a practical sense, you know, for Daniel, I think, and I know this, you know, for the years I've written for the first the local alt weekly here in Charleston, and then the daily newspaper. And if you want to write about something for the Charleston papers, it doesn't involve the South Carolina. Well, can you make a Charleston hook? You know, it's got to be about Charleston. We don't want to, I can't just go write about, you know, Chicago hot dogs unless I can find some places in Charleston that are serving him. So, you know, I suspect, you know, this is the way Daniel's way of getting Texas Monthly to foot his travel bill so that he can go around. Cause I happen to know that when he came through South Carolina, he ate at all Texas places, but he ate at a lot of Carolina places too. He can't write about that because that won't foot the bill, but you know, so I can respect it if he's getting his expenses paid. Otherwise, I think it's a fool's errand.
You don't want to tell him you stay in Texas. You got the rest of the country figured out. Like he told you, stay out of Texas. You don't want to say that.
Yeah, it's travel broadens the mind. So it's good if he can get out of Texas every now and again. That's probably a good thing.
RobertFMoss.com is the website. You will find him here the second Tuesday in the second interview slot in the first hour. And we have a great topic already lined up for May. Robert, always appreciate the time, and we'll see you then.
All right. Thanks, Greg.
You got it. Robert Moss, doing what he does best, giving you education about the history of barbecue. Get his book if you don't have it already. Great. Okay, what do we love about Primo Grills? Well, we love that they're fuel efficient. We love that you can achieve low and slow temperatures for traditional barbecue meats, the cooking of. We also love that they can get rip-roaring hot for temperature grilling, high temperature grilling of steaks, other thin cuts. But what's missing? You know it, I know it. The real ability to do true two-zone cooking. Two-zone cooking is very important to both professional and backyard cooks alike. It's the best way to manage a fire and cook with confidence. However, getting a two-zone fire in a round ceramic cooker isn't very realistic. Why? Because it's round. Enter Primo Grill and their game-changing oval design. Shape gives you the ability to execute that two-zone setup that you desire. Also gives you these ceramic grill benefits as well. When you break it down, there's 60 different ways to cook on it. 6-0. The revamped lift hinge, the Primo Grill rotisserie basket, the pizza grill accessory, everything. They got everything you want. Covers are top notch. You know me and covers. I love covers. Only sold through dealers, primogrill.com. Find a dealer near you. Visit them in person, touch and feel the ovals, and then get the one you think is best for you. Follow them on social media, of course. And we're lining up Nick Bauer for, I guess, what will be the official release of the Primo XXL. So stay tuned for that. We're back to wrap the first hour right after this. Stick around. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Barbecue Central Show. Continuing to produce incredibly mediocre content in an exceptionally professional way. You're listening and watching the Barbecue Central Show. Once again, here's your host, Greg Rampey.
And we thank Robert Moss for joining us last segment, robertfmoss.com. And grab his book if you're out, or when you're out, or go to amazon.com and search Robert Moss. Robert Moss BBQ, that'll probably come up even quicker than that. All right, we will step away here as we get ready for the second hour because we teetered over just a tad, so we'll catch up on the clock. Come back with second hour takes, top of the hour. Give you an update on the current poll. We might talk about the Iditarod race, or we might talk about that I'm a hypocrite. You pick. You're listening and watching the Barbecue Central Show right here on the Barbecue Central Network. We'll be right back. Hang on.